Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking at newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, the countdown is on for the Dublin VHI Mini Marathon. Some advice for the closing chapter for the women this year with Rena Buckley, former Cork GAA dual player, All-Ireland winner and musculoskeletal physiotherapist. And The Working Mind is a mental health in the workplace initiative that launched this week in Dublin. I'll be meeting project coordinator Jackie Mulligan to find out more about this evidence-based programme and how it makes a difference. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I'm good. When you're up, as they say. I did need the bit of the break that came with last week. I had my daughter's confirmation, so a bit of crack with family and friends at the end of a few weeks of organising. You know, the build-up to any event, it can seem to get exhausting. Even a holiday, as you start to get to the finishing line, you start to really struggle with the whole situation. So that's where I was at. But all went well. She was happy and we had a really fun day. And I think that's nice. It's a bit of a break from the daily routine, isn't it? To do something a little bit different. And everyone is talking about the lovely weather we had this week. And I really got to relax in the sunshine. I always talk a bit about holiday you. So I know we can't be like we are on holidays all the time, because when we're on holidays, we're not working. We don't have the same routines. There's often a buffet breakfast. We're not cooking and cleaning up after ourselves in the same way we are at home. So we can get a bit more relaxed. But there are certain things we do on holiday that we can bring into our everyday. And often the weather gives us a little piece of that. But we should be able to do it in all weathers, to be honest. So one is sort of lounging around that little bit more, taking in nature, taking in the view. You're a bit more likely to do that when you're on holiday, to take time over a meal, to engage in conversation that little bit more, to sit out on the balcony. Again, that's something you can do at home, whether it's sitting by the fire on a cold, wet, windy evening, or sitting out in the garden on a really nice sunny day. To linger that bit longer with your book, why don't we allow ourselves to do that a little bit more when we're at home? They were all the things that I was doing in this good weather, and I have to say I felt the benefit of it. So have a little think about it. What are the little things that you do on holiday that you could possibly bring in to your everyday so that there's a bit more holiday you going around? I think we deserve more than just 2 weeks of that every year. You can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, the Dublin VHI Women's Mini Marathon takes place today, and I'm joined on the line by Rena Buckley, ex-Cork dual player and All-Ireland winner and neuromuscular physiotherapist with some last-minute tips. Rena, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks a million. Great to be here.
So you know all about the big events, putting in the training, wondering have you done enough, and those last minute nerves. What's your advice for people this morning?
Yeah, my advice is to go out. It's a brilliant event. There should be a great buzz around Dublin City Centre. Go out, enjoy it. Hopefully you will have a block of training completed. And if that's the case, I'm sure you'll enjoy the race. But look, if you haven't, take it at your own pace, you know. Do it at the pace that you feel comfortable at. Enjoy the event, and it's a phenomenal buzz. There's such a good feel good around Dublin. So just be part of it and enjoy it.
And I do always think, if the worst case scenario is that you're going to walk a good bit of it, sure, what of it? You'll meet people, you'll chat, you'll take in the atmosphere. If that's the worst that can happen, that's not too bad.
Absolutely. The VHI Women's Mini Marathon, it's not a race, it's an event, and people are showing up. They're showing up for themselves, and they're showing up for others. They're showing up for people in their community, people close to their hearts. And you know, there's often a great cause why people are showing up. So because of that, you know, it's not about times, you know, it's not about that kind of stuff. It's about much more than that. It's about people who, you know, maybe who can't make it on the day. It's about good causes. It's about charities. And it's about women showing up for other people as well as themselves, and expressing that, you know, in such a, I suppose, just a lovely kind of social environment.
Yeah, there is an amazing feeling. I've done it many times myself, and the crowd lifts you. And it's really, really lovely to be part of. What are your tips then for what to have for breakfast now?
Yeah, so I suppose What's important is that you're carb loading, so that you're getting in like a I suppose a good breakfast, a significant amount of time before the race. So hopefully this will be some way planned in your diary for today. So like I would say, you definitely would want to leave a gap between your big meal this morning, which will hopefully be full of carbs. So like your porridge is good. If you're not into porridge, cereal is good. If you're really enthusiastic, you can get up and make pasta in the morning. But try and leave that bit of a gap between your meal and the race, so that you won't have a heavy tummy for the run or the jog or the walk itself. And do bear in mind that on the event day, if it's whether it's a big match, whether it's a big exam, or whether it's any sort of event, there's always a couple of butterflies in the tummy. That's totally fine. That's normal. But maybe just be a bit careful what you're eating. Maybe a little bit less is more. You can always have a quick snack beforehand if you need it.
Less is more, particularly when you're going to be putting your body through a good bit of exercise. What about clothing then? I think it's important that people stick to what they've been wearing. No need to be trying on all the new gear today.
100%, great point, Claire. So stick with the tried and tested. So definitely for the shoes, today is not the day to be breaking in a brand new pair of shoes. Even if there's holes at the side of them, stick with what you've been doing over the last couple of months. They're absolutely fine. And the same with your leggings or your runners or whatever you plan on wearing. Make sure it's tried and tested, because you don't want blisters or chafing or anything like that to just come against you on the day.
What about hydration then? I know people get nervous about having to stop for the toilet, but there are actually plenty of designated spots. You will be okay, and it is important to stay hydrated.
Absolutely. At the VHI Women's Mini Marathon, I suppose we're very aware of the challenges, in particular, that women face around participating in sport. And this is an event that we want as many people as possible to participate and engage in. So because of that, look, the weather's been hot during the week. So there's plenty of water stations throughout the route. They're roughly at the 3K, the 6K and the 8K mark. And then there's toilets available at the start and the finish area, as well as along the route as well. So hopefully people's needs will be catered for from that point of view.
Now, you're a neuromuscular physiotherapist, as I said. So what about injury then? If somebody starts to feel a twinge, is it important that they listen to their body rather than push on?
Absolutely, yeah. So maybe some people have felt a twinge in the last week. So if that's the case and you're a bit iffy about, about can I complete this at the start line or not? So like I would say, just have a real honest conversation with yourself, because life will go on after the event as well. So look, it might be a case of reassessing what your goals are. So maybe you had a particular time in mind, and maybe you might decide, look, I might just hold back a little bit and maybe go at a much slower pace, or you might have planned to jog it and you might walk it instead. That's kind of a good outcome. But there are situations as well where something can happen. Something like a stress fracture or something might come in because you have increased your training volume in the last little while. And if something like that happens, look, put it to bed. There'll be the VHI mini marathon again next year. There'll be loads of other events. Look, you just got to be sensible about these things.
Yeah, I mean, you do hear that running can cause injury, but if you listen to your body, if you prepare, if you build up slowly, if you stretch, do you see a lot of runners with injury?
Ah, of course, like there's obviously a physical element to running. And I suppose often you might see novice runners making errors, often, with the best will in the world. But I suppose what's really important if you're planning any sort of training block in any sort of sport is that you're building up your training load gradually. So what that means, your training load is kind of your volume by your intensity. So the volume is like the amount of, let's say, miles or kilometers you're completing, and the intensity piece would be at what pace you're doing that. So some people might be doing speed work, and that's a higher demand on your body than just plodding along. So you've got to be mindful of those two elements of it. I suppose one nugget I would say, particularly for runners, and runners like to run, they don't like doing the kind of the strength work, but strength work is probably the best way you can prevent injury. So if you are a person who likes to get out running, 4 or 5 times per week, you might want to reconsider that and maybe reduce it by one and maybe stick in a strength session instead. And that might actually keep you running a little bit longer.
As you said, it's fun, it's for a brilliant cause, and it's a social event. So wherever you're at, mind yourself, just enjoy it no matter what. Great gems there. You'll have to come on again and talk to us a little bit more in depth about minding our bodies and avoiding injury where possible. Rena Buckley there, ex-Cork dual player and All-Ireland winner and a neuromuscular physiotherapist. And good luck to every single person taking part in the VHI Women's Mini Marathon today.
Thanks, Claire. Enjoy the event.
Right, coming up after the break, we spend so much of our lives at work, so it's important it's a place that values and cares for our mental health. I'll be joined by Jackie Mulligan, who's just launched Working Mind this week, to hear how this evidence-based programme can make a real difference to our well-being.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking. Now, Jackie Mulligan is project coordinator of the Working Mind, an evidence-based approach to enable workplaces to recognise mental health shifts. Having spent 6 years developing mental health programmes in organisations such as An Garda Síochána, she's urging leaders to prioritise a healthy workforce. And Jackie joins me in studio now. Jackie, you're very welcome.
Hello, Claire. Thank you for having me. It's such a privilege to be here.
It's so lovely to have you on. Tell us a little bit about you before we even get into the Working Mind. How did you come to be working in the mental health space?
Wow. Well, as you can hear, I'm working on my Laois accent. I keep telling people I'm from Laois. That's the joke. But I'm originally from South Africa, but I was very fortunate that my daddy gave me my Irish passport. And in, what is it now, 14 years ago, we decided that we needed to, you know, bring our children to live in Ireland. So I left South Africa in 1999 and I moved to the Middle East. And I spent 14 years traveling around the Gulf, predominantly teaching presentation skills, customer service, sales training, all around. I mean, I've been in Tehran where covered from head to toe, to then Dubai where you wander around like we do here on the streets of Dublin. But yeah, 14 years ago when I moved to Ireland, I decided I needed a complete career change. I didn't want to get up in front of people anymore and try and convince them that what I was trying to teach them was a good idea. So I thought, what can I do? And I stumbled across mental health first aid. And I called up Donal Scanlon, who's the head of Mental Health First Aid Ireland, and I said to him, how do I work for you? And he was like, well, it doesn't quite work like that. You have to apply and there's a waiting list and all of that, you know, these waiting lists we always hear about. Anyway, I pursued him and I pursued learning more about mental health. And Martin Gellick, who was then head of the adult program, interviewed me. And he must have been having a good day because he asked me, what mental health background do I have? And I, like, in all seriousness, said to him, well, I'm a mum. I've got three gorgeous teenage children, but they challenge my mental health on a daily basis. I've lived in five countries. And I think I've struggled with my mental health, I said. Think. And he looked at me and he said, okay, let's give you a try. Anyway, I did the instructor program for the first aid program in January of 2020. And we all know what happened in March of 2020. And I was like, heavens alive, here I've just started this brand new career and now I've got to stop. But I didn't. Because of my presentation skill background, we went online and I was introduced to the Canadian Armed Forces Mental Health Continuum. And I realized, looking at it, that it was such a simple way of understanding how we fluctuate in our mental health. And it's so simple. It's got green, yellow, orange, and red zones. In the green zone, you're mentally fit and you're mentally healthy. In the yellow, you're reacting. Then in the orange, it's injured. And then in the red is what we call ill. And I realized there that I was in that orange zone. But you know what? As a mum, I got up every day, I put on that armor, and I just plowed ahead. I didn't realize the learning curve that I was going through then. Anyway, fast forward 3 years, and I started working on the Garda Project, where we were training instructors to deliver this program. And as I say, I went a bit rogue. Donald rolls his eyes at me because he said, you're not allowed to put this into the first aid program. But because the guards worked with a traffic light system in their pulse system, in their PATH system, it made sense to me that they could look at this and see green, yellow, orange, and red. So I tested it on them. And you know what, Claire? I have received the most incredible messages from people saying, you made me realize I'm not in the green zone. This was a simple way of speaking to my wife. This saved my friend because I was able to explain it to her in the most simplest terms. So for me, you know, every day I realize where I'm at in that continuum and how it's a daily discipline to stay in that green zone, to stay mentally fit, mentally healthy. Every day, I'm not always in the green zone. Things happen, you know. I was telling you about losing my mum just over a month ago. And nothing is ever black and white. Nothing is ever in the process. It's never linear. So here we go, back and forth, injured, reacting, healthy. Where are we? And for some people, they live in that red zone. They have a diagnosable mental illness. And this is where we want to be able to have people speak about it, not hide behind that mask, you know, that where we're always just trying to put on that brave face. It's not necessary all the time.
It's so interesting. You know, I had a question to say, what is the definition of mental health? Because I do think people struggle with it. Mm. And the way you presented it in the interview that day really does describe it, doesn't it? Because we talk about mental health as if it's this thing in the corner rather than something that we all
absolutely
have. It's integrated into our lives, whether we've teenagers, jobs, bereavement, grief, it's all tied up.
Finances, everything.
We all have it. How do you define it?
Well, the official definition is how we think, how we feel, and then how we behave. So I love what Steve Jobs said. Let's join the dots looking backwards. When I notice a behavior change in myself and in others, and I think, what's going on there? I've got to look at what's going on inside of me. What emotions am I feeling? But ultimately, it's coming from those thoughts. And some of those negative thoughts really impact how we look at things.
Yeah. And I mean, that's tied into everything that we do. And as you say, it's a daily discipline. Mm. And there are times where we're going to be in different zones. Mm. And awareness is the first step. I said in the introduction to the show that we spend such an amount of our time in the workplace. So it is incumbent on the workplace to be conscious of our mental health. What does workplace well-being mean to you, particularly in the area of mental health?
Well, you know, I do understand that it's a complicated and, you know, various levels of well-being in the workplace. Some organizations say, well, we've done the training, people must get on with it themselves. We've got an EAP, an employee assistance program, people must tap into that. But it goes beyond that. It goes to people having conversations. Now, the Mental Health First Aid program and the Working Mind program that we're going to introduce is that foundation, really, of what is then needed. So what is workplace well-being? It's a culture, a community where people all feel that I can talk about what's going on. I feel comfortable. There's going to be no stigma. No stigma is what the panacea is, the, you know, goal. But there's always going to be those judgments. People are judgmental. Human beings are naturally going to judge any situation. But if we can get to a point where, you know, we have that, the resources, the supports that people can say, look, I'm struggling right now. And we have the communication that says, what can I do for you? I don't have to fix it. And that's the beauty. What I learned 6 years ago was no one wants you to fix it. And I'm a fixer and a feeder. You ask my children that. They're like, whatever you need, I'll fix this. Rather than let it just go away, let me fix it. But it's not that. It's let's listen. Simon Sinek has got some amazing work. Do you know him?
Yeah.
Oh, he's one of my favorites when it comes to his new thing with the 8 minutes. Have you got 8 minutes? Have you heard that one?
No, tell us.
Oh, wow. So Simon Sinek says, if you're if you're struggling and you send someone a message, have you got 8 minutes? They know that it's just a conversation. You just want someone to listen to you. It's not about fixing. Just, have you got 8 minutes? And that's the code. That's the little message that can come through and say, okay, I can pick up the phone. All of us have 8 minutes sometime in our day to be able to have that chat with a good friend or a colleague, that we can just listen.
And what is mental health first aid? Because is that still in the crisis model? So you're waiting for something to go wrong, then you're reaching out, and then you're patching that up in a way. And obviously with the best of intention, and how amazing to have it there, and you can signpost people and you can look out for people, and it obviously sends out a message. But is that what its place is?
Well, we don't want it to just look at that crisis situation. Yes, obviously we train the crisis situations and how to deal with that. But what we want, when it comes to the mental health first aid program, it's about looking at early intervention. And you have a better understanding of what the person might be going through. And this is the beauty of having both the working mind and the first aid program, is because they're complementary to each other. If you've done the first aid program, the working mind just gives you added education around the struggles that someone might be having. If you've only got the first aid program, you're that mental health first aider. You're just like a physical first aider. You're not a doctor. You're definitely not a therapist. So it's about saying what's going on and then signposting. I love the first aid program. I mean, it's been my life for 6 years now. And that listen and communicate non-judgmentally. And that's all part of being empathetic with someone. Listen and communicate non-judgmentally. And then, okay, what can we do about this? What do you need? Where can I signpost you? So it's offering that hope for recovery, maybe emotional support, a hug, but a listening ear. I always say God gave us two of these eyes, two of these ears, and one mouth.
Yeah, it's so important that we remember that and just hold space for people sometimes. And often with mental health, carrying it alone makes it a lot harder. And the minute you speak to somebody, I mean, I know, as you say, we're not supposed to fix it and we're not supposed to jump in with, you know, Me Too or anything like that. But sometimes the power of shared experience, you realize I'm not alone in this. Not only do I have support, but other people are feeling this way too. And that really can reduce it. So having that first aid program is so important. Can I ask you about working with An Garda Síochána? And so that's relatively new that they've brought in mental health measures, which is amazing to hear, because obviously it's such challenging work and would really need mental health support.
Oh, Claire, that's been probably the best project I've ever worked on. The rewards that I've received, you know, from just people having conversations. So it started off in 2023, where my first job was to train 16 mental health first aid instructors. We went on to do four, I call them tribes because I'm from Africa, I'm allowed to call them tribes. So tribe one, tribe two, tribe three, and tribe four. So we trained 61, what we call embedded instructors. And they then went out to then train their colleagues, whether it be GARDA personnel, or GARDA staff, or GARDA members. And every single one of those instructors are just so important to me, because we formed like a family. And that's why tribes are important, because you stick together, you work together. They then went out in year one, they trained almost 3,000 people. And year two, we trained almost 3,000 GARDA personnel. And that has made a huge difference. And it's just that the momentum is now growing. the momentum needs to get to a point where it starts to change that the culture, that macho culture, and they want to, you know, really be able to have conversations. And conversations are happening. They're happening in those cars. They're happening, you know, instead of going to the pub. I don't want to say that. Instead of, you know, avoiding conversations, they then sit down and have a chat about it. People recognize the early warning signs.
God, like this fireworks going off in my brain as I'm connecting all of these dots together, because that's such an important message. Often when we talk about mental health, we think about the psychiatrists, the psychologists, the therapists. And yes, of course, they are very much part of it. But that community, that tribe, the people side by side, there's real power there too. So that's incredible. We'll have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about the launch of Working Mind in Dublin this week and what this entails. You're listening to Alive and Kicking here on News Talk, where I'm talking to Jackie Mulligan, Project Coordinator in the mental health space.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk. Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking, where I'm joined in studio by Jackie Mulligan, Project Coordinator of the Working Mind, an evidence-based approach to enable workplaces to recognise mental health shifts. And we had the launch of Working Mind in Dublin this week. I had the honour of being on the panel. Thank you for inviting me. Tell us a little bit about the programme and what was happening on Wednesday night.
Oh, it was such a beautiful evening. I'm absolutely delighted to have had you there and had our guest speakers, Alan Quinlan and Professor Brendan Kelly. The Working Mind really gives us an opportunity to start having those conversations in the office. It gives us a common language to be able to say, instead of saying, I'm feeling a little bit depressed or anxious, we can say, I'm in the yellow zone today. Which just indicates to your colleague, your friend, maybe your family member, I'm just not myself. What the beauty of the Working Mind is that now I can start to recognize those early warning signs in my friends, my families, and my colleagues, so that I don't need to wait for it to get to escalate to, you know, maybe a crisis situation. Every day we look at, you know, how we fluctuate in our mental health and well-being. And I'm not always on top form. You know, life gets in the way. I'm worried about, you know, maybe my son is traveling at the moment and he's not speaking to me. So, of course, as a mother, you're going to get worried about that. You know, maybe there's financial struggles, maybe there's relationship struggles. And it all starts to take its toll. That's life. That's what's going to happen. But what we look at then is understanding those fluctuations. And that's the beauty of the Working Mind, is to have that common language around what we can say, but identifying the early warning signs.
And even as you're talking, I'm thinking about the last few months for myself, and I've definitely had a dip as life has taken its toll. And even hearing you describe that way, because, you know, in the last week or so, I'm like, I'm coming back. And to even have that validated, that that's normal. That's what everyone's thinking. Because I think as our mental health starts to slip or our mood starts to lower, you know, and I say with sensitivity for people who have a mental health illness. But as that starts to happen, often we start to beat ourselves up and say, why aren't I coping? Why is this happening? And that can even let us sink that little bit further. But knowing that these are just different zones that we move through from time to time does bring the shoulders down a little. We touched on it before the ad break, but would you mind going into the zones and the colours a little bit to help people understand it that little bit more?
Absolutely. So in the green zone, I'm mentally fit and I'm mentally healthy. I take life in my stride. I have a great sense of humour. I might have a glass of wine. You know, if you came around to dinner with me, I'd have a glass of wine and, you know, we'd have a great chat. But well, as I said, life happens. You know, maybe my relationship is struggling. Maybe the car needed an extra service and now it's going to cost me, which I hadn't saved for because I spent money on that holiday and which I needed. So there's a bit of financial pressure. My relationship is struggling. And then I hear my friend is diagnosed with a terminal illness. And what does that feel like? A punch in the stomach. So I start what we call reacting to life. So I get a little bit grouchy. I'm not sleeping well. I don't go to my yoga class like I would always go to. I then, you know, because I'm not sleeping well, I'm not meal prepping, I'm not eating properly, and this all escalates. And if I don't go and look for help, and nobody says anything to me, I'm not going to go back to the green. I'm going to go to the orange. And in the orange is what we call injured. But there, life is harder. So I start to really struggle. And I don't go to gym. I don't go for my walks in the Phoenix Park. I stop socializing. I withdraw. I get really grumpy. The kids leave the dishes out and I absolutely lose it with them. The smallest little things start to impact me. And once again, if I don't ask for help and nobody says anything to me, I then move further down that continuum into what we call the red zone. Now, from the red zone, trying to get back to the green zone is a lot more difficult than if I'd recognize those early warning signs in the yellow and then made my plan to move back into the green zone. Start to recognize, start to have those conversations. If I've got an employee assistance program, tap into them, because for me as an employee, it's free. So I don't have that financial concern of how am I going to find a therapist now to talk about this. Find friends also that, you know, you can talk to. Not just anyone and everyone, because, you know, you get advice from some people, but are they living life, you know, the way you want to, is that the sort of help that you want? So be selective of who you talk to, because you don't want to be dragged down. You know, I always say, don't go to the drama llamas. Speak to someone who, you know, has a perspective on life. I've got two friends in my life. I go to them when I know I need serious life coaching. They're not a life coach, but, you know, someone with five boys in her life, she knows, you know, a little bit more about life than I do. So for that sort of advice, I go to her. And then, you know, I start to look at, okay, let's reevaluate where am I at with my sleep, because that is so important. And this is, we'll talk about it a little bit later, the five pillars of well-being. You know, it's very easy to lie on that couch with the blanket over you, maybe the cat sitting on top of you and watching that Netflix series. And when one episode ends, of course it's going to end on a cliffhanger. What are you going to do?
Hit next.
Of course you are. What should you do?
Go to bed.
Why? Because then you'd get your 7 to 9 hours of quality sleep, okay? But it's so comfortable. And we don't want to get up. I'm certainly not going to disturb the cat. So I lie there and I watch one more episode. And the next thing you look, it's 12:30. And you could have got another hour and a half sleep. You know, and when we think about whoever went to the gym and said that was the worst thing I ever did today. You know, the gym exercise, and I'm not talking running marathons. I will never be able to run a marathon. But I go out and I do my walks, and I'm trying to, religiously now to get my 10,000 steps a day. Not always possible, and I'm certainly not going to beat myself up if I don't get there. But you know what? I make an effort. Instead of lying on that couch, I'll say, right, I've got the Phoenix Park on my doorstep. Why don't I just go for a walk? In these beautiful evenings, it's just stunning to do that.
And I loved what you said about not beating yourself up about it, because that's a huge message of mine when it comes to the well-being space. But it's also nice to bring those zones into your mind because you're getting outside, because it's going to keep you in the yellow or move you closer to the green, that you're doing your best to feel as good as you can. And sometimes that's a better way to feel rather than you want to lose weight or because you have to or because you didn't do it yesterday, because that's pulling you in the other direction. What are some of the other pillars? We've done sleep, we've done movement.
Okay, so sleep is important. So your 7 to 9 hours. Then there's what we call exercise, but it's not a marathon. It's about 150 minutes of cardiovascular a week. Now, that's 20 minutes a day. Park your car in the furthest car parking space and take that extra, you know, walk. Walk, like today, walk in here rather than try and drive in. And I'm one for driving in, easy. Find parking and it's easy. But do that walk. Schedule it in that you're doing the walk. The next thing is nutrition. And it's not only about what you eat. It's about how you eat it. So it's intuitive eating. And sometimes we just gobble that meal down. In the car, I'm eating my sandwich. Sit at the desk, have my breakfast. But it's about stepping away from that desk. It's about enjoying the meal prep also. And that's the full part about nutrition. What you eat, how you eat it. Family meals is another thing. We've tend to, you know, the kids eat one thing, they fussy, we'll eat another thing. But there's a lot of research around family meals and sitting down and having phone-free, obviously, time that we can have those conversations. You know, the Portuguese, the Spanish, and the Greeks sort of culture where they sit down and they have those family meals. And it's breakfast, lunch, and supper that you're having those family meals. And there's a real, that Mediterranean diet. It's more about not so much, it's all about what they eat, but also how they eat it.
Mm, and those plans. Shared platters and the community around the table. Community. I assume that's one of your other pillars, community and connection.
Well, we're going to get to that one because we've thrown in a really tricky word. It's called metacognition. And people always go, what's that? So think about it. Meta and cognition being the brain. It's about being aware of those thoughts. So as a human being, we have about 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. Now, people have asked me, how do they measure that? I leave that to the scientists and the researchers to figure that one out. But on average, there's a lot of thoughts that are going around in that brain of ours. A lot of them are not positive. They're the negative thoughts. I'm not good enough. I should have. I could have. What if? And we need to be more aware of those. You know, when you think about you've done something wrong and you say, you're such an idiot. Why are we talking to ourselves like that, Claire? You know, watch those thoughts. Be more aware of the thoughts. But it extends. It says about, you know, who am I hanging around with? Am I hanging around with negative Nancys that bring me down rather than lift me up? So Brendan's got a fantastic talk, and I can't wait for you to interview him also, because he talks about the U-curve of happiness. And I'll let you interview him on that one. But basically what happens as we get, you know, in our, as a 10-year-old, as a 20-year-old, as a 30-year-old. So apparently around 47, 48, that's your most unhappiest year. Have you heard that?
I'm 48.
There you go. You've made it.
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in.
So his U-curve is sensational. You must have him talk to you about it, because at 10 years of age, you know, you suddenly, well, at zero, when you're born, you're the happiest you will ever be. Why? Because you open your mouth, you cry, and people attend to you, obviously, as long as you're not in an abusive upbringing, okay? But you're so happy. You haven't a care in the world. Everybody takes care of you. And then at 10, 7, 8, 9, 10, you start to get your identity and you start pushing back and you start, you know, getting your attitude. And it's so beautiful to see a 10-year-old. But then what happens at 20? Life really starts knocking you down. Where are you supposed to be at 20? I mean, at 17, 18, have you got the Leaving Cert results? Are you in the college? Have you got a relationship going? You know, all those life expectations, which are really rubbish. Then at 30, where are you supposed to be at 30? Married, got a house, you know, you've got the mortgage, you got the perfect job, right? 40, are you happily married now? Are the kids fantastic and perfect? Have you got your white picket fence? You see? And then he talks about, you know, 47, 48, you suddenly realize, what's in my circle of control and what's out of my circle of control? Now, unfortunately, some people are going to take 10 years to get to that point. But that's where he says your happiness curve starts to come up again. And we start to realize, and unfortunately, a whole lot of divorces happen around that age too, because you, once again, you're looking at, okay, what's important to me? 50, 60, those start to become your happiest years of your life again.
I'm glad to hear I'm on the up. And it is interesting to see how much of an impact societal expectations have on our mental health and how happy we are throughout our life. We are running out of time, Jackie, but this Working Mind program, where is it going to go? And why is it incumbent on leaders of all kinds of businesses, be they retail, office, gyms, it doesn't matter. Why is it so important that we introduce measures like this into the workplace?
That's a gorgeous question, Claire. Thank you for asking me that, because we have to start shifting the way we interpret and the way we deal with people who are struggling with their mental health. Everybody has mental health. You, me, every single person. And it's not black and white. And it's not well and unwell. So the minute we have that common language, and the minute we can start feeling more comfortable. I mean, what if I walked in today and I said to you, Claire, how's your mental health? Instead of just, how are you? You know? So we want to feel more comfortable. We want to be able to, and it needs to, and it's not only managers' responsibilities. It's not only senior leadership responsibilities. A healthy workplace is where both the employee and the managers work together to create a comfortable environment. So there's no use pointing fingers. There's three pointing back at you all the time. So just remember that, let's all add to the value of that, you know, working relationship. Let's all add to a healthy, psychologically safe workplace.
Yeah, and let's take the fear out of it. It's not a failure to be in the red zone. It's normal life. Mm. Where can people find out more?
Oh, okay. So if you look up Mental Health First Aid Ireland and The Working Mind, we are at St. John of God Hospital, and I will be very happy to take any calls related to, you know, how we can embed the Working Mind training into your organization.
Well, Jackie, I'm so glad our paths crossed. You are fantastic, and that was amazing information for the listeners. I'm so delighted that you came on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Claire.
Jackie Mulligan there, Project Coordinator of The Working Mind. So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aoife Breen, and to Hugo De Silva Scott, who was on sound. Rory Galvin was on podcasts. And thanks as ever to you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.